Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for September 14th, 2017. I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheStory.com and The Step Back. Today, Andy Liu from Warriors World and the Light Years podcast is the guest. He, of course, covers the Warriors, and if you know him from Twitter, he has a very distinct personality. But Andy, on this podcast, really made some, I think, really astute points about the Cavs, about the rivalry between these two teams, and I think in particular you'll find his opinion on how Isaiah Thomas could fit into the Cavs-Warriors series as particularly interesting, and it's worth getting into. We talked if the Warriors got better this summer, how the Cavs compute them, how all the Cavs' new pieces can help against the juggernaut that is the Golden State Warriors. But hope you guys enjoy this. We will be back tomorrow with one mailbag show for the week. And then next week, we're going to get full into preview shows. So if you have last-minute mailbag questions, drop them to me at lockdowncavs@gmail.com. Tweet them at me to @lockdowncavs. And we're going to do it on Facebook Live up around 10 o'clock or so. So you can check that as well. But hope to talk to you guys then. But here's today's show with Andy Liu from Warriors World and the Light Years podcast.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Andy, I'm gonna start with a very just kind of broad question. After this offseason, are the Warriors better on paper coming into this year than they were last year?
I think the easy answer is yes at this point with the guys that they've added. And I'd also say that I'm shocked that they are better. I actually thought that they would lose Livingston, wouldn't get much out of the draft, and really wouldn't add anybody in free agencies that mattered. Like even retaining a David West, a Zaza, anybody like that, those guys are a year older. You don't expect really even the same production, you know, as they had last year. Instead, what they actually did was signed a couple free agents that were actually good, Caspi and Nick Young, maybe not guys that you're going to play against Cleveland in the finals again, but guys that are going to play a lot of regular season minutes, and then re-signed everybody down to JaVale, and then even got someone in the NBA draft like Jordan Bell that's able to, you know, you think be some type of defensive playmaker at a certain point when they can't, you know, have Zaza and West and JaVale and those type of guys on the team anymore. So it is a little bit surprising that they got better. On paper, they were going to get better anyway, just in terms of they're going to play together more. But with someone like KD taking less, which is a complete shock, and it's one of the crazier things given that, you know, the rest of the league has kind of either stayed put or, you know, in your case, the Cavs case, you know, maybe gotten worse.
Yeah, the KD takes $9 million less is one of the, I think, like, it was talked about a lot, I think, when it happened, but I think it overall got to be one of, like, the top 3 to 4 most impactful moves of the summer, just in terms of the flexibility it creates. And, like, getting, like, you just look at who they added. Like, you mentioned Caspi, who has been sort of, like, an underrated guy. He's in his prime, got him on a cheap deal, can play the four, can attack off the dribble, can defend a little bit. Nick Young is Nick Young, but it's like if there's a team that sort of proves, if there's like two teams in the league that are good at sort of turning these guys that are knuckleheads in other situations, it's like the Cavs and the Warriors. Like look what they did with JaVale McGee. Like JaVale McGee was like a playable NBA center in the finals and like had moments where he gave the Cavs problems because he was just so much bigger than Tristan Thompson. You look at just like this roster, like it's weird for me to say, but it's like it almost feels like they're a little bit deeper. And I think, like, maybe you're right. Like, maybe Caspi and Nick Young and JaVale don't, like, aren't, like, a reason you tip the series in the finals. But, like, you get Jordan Bell to have another young guy with McCaw. Like, it just seems like the rich got a little bit richer in a way that, like, maybe isn't overwhelmingly so. It's not like they added Paul George to this, but it's also like, okay, they added a bunch of guys that are quality and are going to allow them to not have to play KD like 38 minutes in the regular season and like have to just like ride their guys all year. Like if this gets Andre Iguodala a regular season to rest, yeah, that's a win in itself, because look at how much fresher he was after he was kind of, everyone was, and at least I was a little bit like concerned that he was going to fade. And then it's like, you look how he was in the finals, and if you can replicate that, that's a huge win.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Like, it's not about having these guys play when it matters. It's about getting these guys in the games when it doesn't matter, so the guys that do matter can play when it does matter. If that makes any sense. Like especially what you're saying, like, they want to get McCall these minutes, Young these minutes, Cassidy these minutes, because I think Steph has averaged maybe under 35, 36 minutes a game in the regular season the past couple of years. They've tried to get guys like him, Clay, Draymond, and especially Iguodala, less minutes in the regular season. Now, it's worked because they blew a lot of guys out in 2015 and 2016. But, you know, if they had kept Harrison Barnes and KD wasn't on the team, there was going to be a little regression that was coming, as we saw, you know, how Steph started last year a little bit slow. So, I mean, obviously they got KD, and that's one thing that makes life a lot easier. But they're going to have to brace for some type of regression, and this is going to sound a little bit arrogant, but next year or the year after, right, they're going to have to work on getting these younger guys up and running so they can have guys that take those minutes from them when the games don't matter as much. Now, I think that's one of the problems that LeBron-led teams do have, is because they play with vets so often, and LeBron loves vets so often. And again, you know, it works, but it's not entirely sustainable. I think the Warriors are trying to make this system sustainable by getting McCall, Damian Jones, Jordan Bell, guys like that in-house to where they can play 15 to 20 minutes a game, you know, in 2019. Something like the Spurs is, I think, what they're striving for.
I think you said that. Was like, I think that's like a very astute point, just because, like, I think if I have a critique of David Griffin and what he did as Cavs GM, it's that there wasn't a prioritization of young talent. Like, Kyrie was like the young guy, and if you look at who the Cavs have added in terms of young players, the two guys they had on the roster last year were Kay Felder, who's this 5'9 point guard that Dan Gilbert liked and they paid money to pick, who just doesn't translate as an NBA player based purely on his size, and Eddie Tavares, who's like a very good D League player. But you signed him on the last day of the regular season after you tried Larry Sanders, and you couldn't really like try to, I think, use him in a way that I think would make sense. Like in the play, you couldn't like throw him in the playoffs, at least later on,
right,
to like eat,
right,
minutes Tristan Thompson. This year they've pivoted a little bit. Like it's not quite a setup like Golden State is. Like, I still think, like, obviously you get a guy like Jordan Bell, who all the draft Knicks were freaking out about the Warriors got. You know, McCall was really good, was really solid as a rookie. They got Chetty Osman. They got these other guys, like, got Zizic in the trade. They're actually getting picks, but like I think that's a very good point. It's like you have to, I think, be comfortable in like letting these young guys fail in the regular season so they can actually play. And like McCall played in the finals last year, and like I'm sure if you asked him, he would give a cliche answer on like why that mattered for him, but that stuff matters. Like getting those guys reps when like you're playing against LeBron in the finals, it's crazy, and that's like a very, very important thing. I think that's just, that matters, and it's an astute thing, because these guys are going to break down. Like I don't know like who you think out of the core is going to break down first, but like what if Draymond Green like breaks down in 2 years, and like what position are you in then? You're right, like how do you keep going if KD are still going to be able to compete at that level, but Draymond, who's essential, slips a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's key, and for the Warriors, I mean, it's also might be a luxury type thing where Clay might be gone, you know, a year or two from now. But I mean, we're looking really down the line, right? So, and I think that the Cavs, that was my biggest gripe as someone that would, you know, as maybe some of your followers may know, one of the people that kind of makes fun of the Cavs the most online, is just that they won the championship in 2016, but they also, in my eyes, felt content like they actually won that title. Like completely healthy, like as someone that they should have won. Now the Warriors won the title in 2015 when Kyrie and Love were hurt, right? So let's start that with off as a preface. But from there, they also got better. Like they also tried and they played harder and they added pieces. And Steph Curry came out and produced one of the greatest offensive seasons really in NBA history in 2016. The Cavs, after winning the title in 2016-2017, really didn't do much. Right, they felt like, hey, we don't need to get any better. We don't really care if the Warriors have Kevin Durant. We're just going to, we feel like we have LeBron James, and, you know, he always owns LeBron. He always loans KD, and, you know, Steph is going to be as bad as he was in last year's finals, and, you know, everything's going to stay the same, and we're going to win the title again, right? I think part of it was them feeling that way. And also, you know, it kind of reflected in how ownership felt about it, because they didn't really push to make any moves. They were content. And I think part of that is playing the Eastern Conference, where you don't really get pushed. And part of that is also, you know, there's really not much they could have done. But again, they have guys like Isaac Felder, and they had DeAndre Liggins, who is at least athletic and plays well on
and, like,
defense.
He was good on, like, he was good on Christmas Day. Like, he was good on Christmas Day. And it's like, it probably doesn't matter in last year's finals. Like, Having watched was it game three where Kyrie and, like, LeBron, like, just kind of got tired late, and, like, watching how much it took for them just to get there, even though they were both just bonkers in that game. I can't remember if it was game three or game four at this point, that game that they lost in Cleveland before taking to five, but, like, you know, like, I understand why. Like, I think, like, it was an interesting question, and it's another critique of David Griffin, which this isn't really about that, but it's like, signing Dante Jones, like, is to be a locker room guy. Like, I get some of that, right? Like, I think it's, like, kind of problematic if that's what you feel you have to do. But, like, if you looked at Liggins, like, I think he was better than Amon Shumpert on defense. And, like, yes, he's gonna, like, struggle to shoot. The Warriors would abandon him. They would leave whoever on him and let that guy roam. And that's a hiding place for Curry. Like, there's no doubt about that. But it's a guy who's gonna compete. He's a guy who's not gonna play outside of himself. And there's a lot of value in that, and just in a vacuum. And, like, yeah, that's a very narrow path to victory, but their path's narrow anyway. And, like, I just I think that's a fair critique. And it's like, if you have guys that actually can do stuff and are going to play hard, and are at least, like, you have options, at least, because you, maybe that big roster overhaul wasn't possible before. Like, we don't really know one way or the other if Paul George or Jimmy Butler would have been available the summer before. But, like, that's the other way you have to go about it, I think. And it's an interesting thing that they doubled down on the old, even though, like, they kind of maybe in some ways didn't have a choice because of their assets. It's, when you get LeBron, it's, like, it's a very interesting thing. He goes to when he goes to Miami, that was maximum flexibility. It is pushed to its brink when he leaves, right? Like, there's nothing really left there. In Cleveland, it's not that way now, because of the summer they kind of did hit the reset button in a sense, but it was getting close to there. Like, it was very plausible that they come into this season that we're, like, a couple weeks away from, and it would have been the same roster they had last year with just maybe a few Jeff Green, Derrick Rose additions instead of Derrick Williams.
I do think, though, LeBron, I know you're saying, you know, Griffin is making these choices. I do think, well, LeBron is a part of it.
He would rather have,
like, a Jamal Crawford or a Derrick Rose or someone like that, right? He would rather have a veteran that he, you know, perhaps will trust rather than a younger guy, because he just doesn't necessarily have the patience, and that's fine, right? He wants to win a title this year, and he wants to win one right away. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, you do have to have some type of patience and trust that, you know, your training staff or your scouting department or ownership, and maybe you can't in Cleveland, maybe, but, you know, that it's Steph doesn't have that type of say, right? He's like, hey, you know, he doesn't want it. He's like, hey, if you want to play McCall these minutes, that's fine. If you want to play these guys these minutes, you know, that's okay. If you want to play Anderson Barish out game 7 minutes, you know, that's fine, because he does have some type of two-way trust and two-way communication. So I will say that. And so it's tough, though. Just because of LeBron James and he'll get you to the finals, we're really nitpicking, I think, for Cleveland. I know this has nothing to do with Golden State, but really, when you talk about these two teams, they'll always be, I think at a certain point in history, they'll always go down as really each other's rivals, you know, in this decade.
No, I mean, like, if you just think about, like, how LeBron goes home, and it's like the Warriors just are this, like, historical, like, anomaly in a lot of ways, and just how good they are, and, like, how dominant they've been, just that collection of talent. It's crazy. Before we get into just kind of this season, you look at what this team sort of is right now. Do you see, like, any way they might slip this year? Like, is there any reason to think that there's, like, one aspect of this team that might not be quite as good as it was last year?
The things that might slip, I would say, are off the court. So I'll answer the on the court, but I'll say off the court, maybe comments that come out in terms of KD making fun of Steph's shoes. I will say Steph is usually. And the shoe thing, which I've never really cared about. Like, I'm not a big shoe person. Yeah. So I never really understand it. But I've gotten to have to understand it just from a Warriors perspective of how crazy it is from the Steph side and the Warrior side. So I think that, you know, that's something that might, you know, show up maybe a year or two down the line. So I'd say that. I'd say if Klay wasn't who he was, that would be a problem for sure. Draymond Green has calmed down in the past year or so, which I literally haven't heard from Draymond all offseason, which is, you know, compared to last offseason.
Yeah, when crazy. he had the Olympics, he had the last summer was the arrest,
Yeah, that was just insane last year. So he's, you know, he's learned, and, you know, you hope that he's not as, you know, out there as usual. On the court, I think really that's a really tough question. I think focus. For these guys, it's going to be defense. So if something that slips, it's going to be that. In 2015, they had the number one ranked defense. They won the title. 2016, they had a good defense, but I think it was only the top five, top six around there. And really, they weren't good really throughout the postseason. And then in 2017, Draymond Green has said specifically, hey, if we're going to win the title, it's going to be on defense because these guys can get buckets regardless, right? But you've got to be able to really – you can't just get stops no matter what, because – especially against guys like LeBron and not Kyrie anymore, but anybody else that you play. Just because you turn up doesn't mean you can suddenly get stops. So for these guys, it's going to be on that end. And it's a change of personnel as well. Because, you know, Nick Young is presumably 3-and-D, but we don't know if he can really play defense. Cassie's not athletic, really. Iguodala loses a step. KD only tries, you know, when he wants to on defense. Steph's a decent defender, but again, he's overmatched physically. So we're only talking about, let's say, Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, right? They're guys that are great defenders, but, you know, throughout a regular season, they're going to lose focus just because it's an 82-game, essentially preseason at this point. So that's going to be interesting to see if they can turn it back on, because we have seen it before in 2016 where they were unable to turn their defense back on and they ended up losing a title.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the reasons the Cavs to come back, just like they kind of were put in this position, and, you know, like all the off them kind of hyping themselves up, and the Warriors do, like, I mean, lost just a little bit there. Before we continue with Andy here, I'm going to let you remind you that you can find all the Locked On Network pods, whether that's Locked On Cavs, Locked On Warriors, Locked On Nets, if you want to keep track of the Cavs' potential number one pick next year, in one feed on Locked On NBA. Search that on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. And if you do go on iTunes, please go give a rating and review so we can get more people listening to this podcast. So, Andy, you look at the Cavs. You mentioned that they might have gotten a little bit worse. And I think, like, that's something it's hard for me to really, like, know, because I think, like, in one way, like, I think Crowder helps a lot. I think Zizic could be, like, a minutes eater for Tristan Thompson, which I think could have a lot of value for them. The point guard thing is just, like, a huge problem. What was your just kind of read on that trade that the Cavs made with Boston, from someone who's, like, looking at this and saying, okay, this is the likeliest two teams that could get out of the East to face the Warriors? Like, what did you make of that?
You know I was laughing, Chris. Come on now.
Andy, full disclosure, sometimes, like, when stuff happens with the Cavs and it's, like, before West Coast time, I'm just, like, waiting for, like, noon to hit, so, like, I know you're up by then, and, like, looking at Twitter, and I'm just like, waiting for the bombs to come in over Cavs Twitter, and just people to get, like, irrationally angry about it.
You want to see them complete that Paul George trade, right, and get Eric Bledsoe back. You want to see them do that. Instead, right, it's crazy because I'm one of the guys that I love watching LeBron, and he's one of my, you know, favorite players besides Steph, obviously. But it's also, you can kind of understand where Kyrie is coming from his perspective, and why Kyrie chose to make that trade request. Not just because of LeBron, but because of everyone else, right, trade rumors, et cetera. Now, if we're talking about on the court, I would say if Isaiah Thomas was as good as he was last season in the regular season and throughout part of the playoffs, the Cavs are better. Like, Isaiah can score. Isaiah was a better player in the regular season than Kyrie last year in the regular season. Top level, like, Kyrie has the, you know, one of the greatest shots in NBA history, and he's someone that can drop 40 on the Warriors. And really, if you're a Warriors fan, he's one of the guys that legitimately scare you, like, on offense, like, more than LeBron. Like, I would say that I was scared in an ISO situation of Kyrie more than I was of LeBron in the past two seasons. So he is someone that is incredible, but he was also not that good in the regular season. So Isaiah, if he was healthy, makes them better. And then you also add defense, which they don't have on the wings. Now you have Jay Crowder, right? The pick is meaningless because who knows if LeBron is going to be back. If he's not going to be back, that's great. If he is going to be back, what are you really going to do with the pick? Because you still got to wait a couple of years for that pick to develop. So that one is a little, it's great. Threw it in. That's awesome. But for the purpose of going up against the Warriors in the finals, that pick doesn't matter unless they're flipping it for Anthony Davis, which isn't happening, or DeMarcus Cousins, who doesn't want to play with LeBron, so that doesn't make sense. So what I would say is it really depends on that hit for this season. Like, if Isaiah is healthy, the Cavs get better. I really think that. But if he's not, and it sounds like he's 30, he's had complications on that, is what everyone's heard. It's a little scary. It kind of turns them. It turns LeBron into like that 2015 LeBron, where he has to average like 30, 15, and 15 just for the Cavs to win, a game or two. And you look at it from the Warriors side, they have Durant now, so that's kind of ugly now that you think about it. So I think the hope is that you pray Isaiah Thomas is fully healthy, but I think that's that's the largest question in the NBA right now, right? Like, there's no question larger than that. When we talk about this upcoming 27 season, it's that, because if that hip is not healthy, this season is going to be a joke for the Warriors. But if they get full 50-point Isaiah Thomas against the Wizards, that now we're like, we might have a 6-game series at that point.
I love that you're six games. Yeah, it's still like inevitable, but 6 games instead of 5. The interesting thing about Isaiah that if you just look at his like raw plus minus from the Warriors last year, it was like minus 51 or something like that. And I think like the concern I think I have with Isaiah in that series is if you just look at like what he is, I think offensively like he can if he's healthy, he's gonna score. Like, that's, he's gonna get buckets and he's gonna, I think could do a little zippier stuff and be more willing to maybe allow Love to do some stuff, which has its own detriments, but I just don't know if, like, defensively, like, Kyrie's not good, is not good defensively. Like, Kyrie's bad. Like, Kyrie's a bad defender. There's not really a way around that. He plays with almost no effort. Isaiah at least would be willing to come around screens and fight through screens and at least try to defend, even though he just physically is going to have his limitations. And Kyrie wouldn't do that, except for game one of, the 2015 finals when he was bad.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was just crazy to watch him, like, work around pick and rolls, and he doesn't do it all the time, and it's one of the biggest questions I think that are fair about him. Isaiah just, I think, would get hunted more than Kyrie would, just because you know this better than I do. The Warriors don't have that super willingness to run the type of pick and roll with Steph or with KD that the Cavs have with the Kyrie LeBron did with the Kyrie LeBron pick and roll. I wonder if Isaiah just, like, at a certain point is like a 15-minute player in the finals if he's healthy, even if he's like scoring 50 points. And is just peak Isaiah, like MVP caliber Isaiah. I just wonder if, like, he's going to end up unplayable in certain moments of that series. And, like, that in itself is a problem, because then who's guarding Steph? Like, who is guarding Steph? Who is actually matching up against in Steph? Like, are you going J.R. Smith as your nominal one? Like, just guarding Steph Curry? Is, like, that what you have to do? Or is it Amon Shepard? Derrick Rose can't be that. He's bad. He's a bad fit with LeBron. Like, he's literally the worst point guard fit they could have gotten with LeBron, honestly. And you're not giving Calderon or Kay Felder those minutes either. So I wonder if Isaiah becomes unplayable, what does that do to the Cavs, even if in certain ways, like, they're better because of this trade?
Yeah, I think that's always been the way. So that's actually another criticism I had, amongst the litany, I'm sure, that I've had of the Cavs. But that one is huge, because I think the Cavs went into last season series, and both in the Christmas game, both in the regular season, game at Oracle, and also the finals, is that they said they were going to run with the Warriors, is that they're going to try to go bucket for bucket against the Golden State Warriors, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, shooting team of all time, right? Which never made sense to me, because in 2015, they won two games, a miraculous two games, shorthanded, by going big, playing small, and having LeBron slow the pace down entirely. Last year, they went to that, down 3-1, a little bit out of necessity, but they went to that, slowed the game down, and knocked the Warriors off the rhythm. They attacked Steph on those pick and rolls, and they went big and out-rebounded the Warriors. And then and that worked, and they came back and won in 7. And then they come in this year, and they don't do that. They're trying to run up and down the floor, and you see LeBron is gassed. He is legitimately tired because he has to play 47 minutes in the game, and the 1 minute that he sits, the Warriors go on an 8-2 run, right? So he has to play the whole game, every game, and they're playing as fast as possible, which is what the Warriors do. The Warriors are the best conditioned team because they only play 35 minutes a game in the regular season, and they went, you know, 12-0 in the playoffs, and they barely played. So they're out here, and they're ready to run, and the Cavs are trying to go step by step, and that just doesn't work. The best way is they have to, you know, they have to bench someone like Kevin Love or play him sparing minutes. I don't know if Isaiah Thomas is going to be unplayable. I think you have to. I think you're going to have to take some risk because of what he can do on offense and he's healthy. But they've got to slow it down. That's the only way I can see that happening, because if you're going to try to play the Warriors straight up on offense, it just doesn't make sense unless Kevin Love, J.R. Smith is, you know, play guys that you can play big minutes are completely lights out from three. Like, if they're going to suddenly start shooting like Klay Thompson from three, then I understand. But they're going to have up and down games, and they're not going to be able to, I mean, Kevin Love, they're not going to be able to play defense. So I never understood that part. And I guess to your point in terms of IC being unplayable, that's going to be one of the larger things as well. They need more Jay Crowder, right?
Yeah.
They need more. But that's hard to find. And that's where when we talk about, you know, young players and developing them, that's where that comes in. And again, that's hard as well.
That's why Osman, to me, like, I don't know how playable he actually will be as a rookie. You know, he was really good in Eurobasket, and he plays really, really hard. I mean, I think that's something the Cavs don't always do all the time either, is just have guys who play super, super hard. And like, he wasn't shooting well in Eurobasket, and that's concerning in the sense that that's a shorter three-point line anyway, you know, and that's, if he's not shooting threes at an NBA clip there all the time, then, you know, I have to wonder how that's going to translate. But he is long, and he can defend, and you could, like, maybe put him on certain guys and have him hide, and, you know, maybe he can defend Klay off ball, because maybe that's enough. But, like, that's where you, that's why the Jay Crowder thing, to me, I think he's the most impactful player in this trade for the Cavs, at least, just for this year, at least, because I don't know how much of a difference it actually will make. I don't think we can know that, and I think everyone from Boston that I've talked to you about this says maybe his on-ball defense slipped a little bit last year, but he's still a really smart team defender. So as long as the Cavs aren't getting a Damari Carroll signing with the Raptors type situation, as long as that's not happening, they're getting closer to what they want to do with LeBron, and that's put him off-ball. That's having him defend Iguodala, or that's having him defend Draymond. And I think if you're looking at how the Cavs ideally match up against Golden State, those are the best two places to put LeBron in that series, just because you can have him roam a little bit more, and maybe he's using more energy in there, but at least he gives him a chance to create some chaos and take advantage of some of the mistakes Golden State might just make because of just their style of play and what they do. I don't know how much of a difference it actually makes, and a lot of it depends on who's defending Curry still. You know, is Iguodala, how fresh is Iguodala? You know, if Klay has a game sort of like he did, you know, in points of the year finals last year, and, you know, OKC game 6 2 years ago, like, maybe you're just doomed anyway. But I think, like, almost that's the more workable solution, is just have Crowder defend KD. KD's going to get his buckets. You live with it. But if LeBron can create 2-3 more turnovers a game in close games, that's kind of thing you're banking your head on. You're betting J.R. Smith, after he had just a really, really rough year on and off the court, you're betting he's better too, if now that he's healthy and, you know, he's not just didn't spend most of your dealing with a premature birth of his child. Like, there's these little things I think the Cavs probably have to bet on in hopes of that's enough, but it's you think of the Warriors, like, it's probably not, because they're just overwhelming, and, like, you need someone to get hurt. Like, realistically, like, it's not totally fair to just say they won the 2016 finals because Steph got hurt, but that mattered. Like, Steph not being fully healthy mattered, and you could tell, like, and it just stuff matters, and it doesn't take away a championship or not, but that stuff, you need a little bit of luck like that, and I think that's just fundamentally always going to be true, especially when it was very clear last year how big of a gap there is between these teams, and at least when Golden State's just fully clicking and destroying everybody.
Yeah, and keep in mind, I always, you know, like to make it a little bit more arrogant, but Klay Thompson wasn't good in the finals. Like, he was good on defense.
Yeah, like one good.
Games,
he had like one good game on offense, maybe. Like, I know he's really bad in the beginning.
And, He really hasn't been. I think Klay is as a Warriors fan and guy that covers them, but I think he is a little bit overrated on offense. I think he's one of the greatest shooters of all time, but against a high level defense that's trying, I wouldn't say necessarily because Devo's defense is high level, but on the biggest stage they're trying and they're scouting him. It's a little bit overrated. So he's had open looks, but he misses them, and he's not really necessarily able to create. But I do think that because he hasn't been able to do that across all three finals. So I think there is going to be a finals where he's actually going to be, game six cut Klay, but throughout a series. Like, he's going to be consistent 40-plus percentage from three. And now that he doesn't have to guard Kyrie anymore, that opens it up so that he has less of an assignment as well on the other side. So I think that's something that we can look forward to. Well, I say we, but maybe I just mean Warriors fans can look forward to from Klay Thompson, is that an actual good final series. It's one of those things where if KD wasn't on the Warriors, that, this would be really interesting if the Cavs had traded, Isaiah, or traded for Isaiah. So this would be interesting, but now it's just more of, I feel like unless the guy is 100%, this might be a foregone conclusion to what the Warriors can do, next season. I do think they'll get to the finals though. I don't think that Boston did anything that has made them, to me, better than the Cavs. Not at all. Yeah. So I think it's still going to be a relative cakewalk for LeBron.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you bring up that Golden State the Cavs maybe still don't have that competition in the East just because they're probably still going to punk Boston on the boards. You just think of Marcus Morris and Al Horford rebounding against Thompson and Love. That's a big advantage for the Cavs. Who in this year in your mind is actually the biggest threat to Golden State? Besides themselves, KD's foot just falling apart or Steph's ankles becoming brittle or something like that.
I think it's still Cleveland. It's still Cleveland. They've got the personnel to play to score. They've got the personnel to I wouldn't say defend, but to get stops, for a couple quarters. They can play with the Warriors quick, play close, and then they can get stops. I think it's still Cleveland. Guys are staying Houston, but I don't see it. Let me see them play together for half a season, right, when it matters. Let me see Chris Paul yell at James Harden for dribbling the ball too much. Let me see how Harden reacts to that before you tell me that those guys are able to beat the Warriors. I don't believe that. They don't have the defensive personnel or really the offensive personnel to go up against the Warriors. The Warriors can just switch everything and play them. Like, that's not a problem. Kyrie's a better, ISO scorer than Chris Paul. Right, so you don't have to worry about too much there, and Iguodala and KD can both handle Harden as much as they can. So I don't see it there. San Antonio took a step back. Really, I don't really know what they're doing, so I don't understand that. And then you've got Oklahoma City, which is fine, but the Warriors beat Oklahoma City when they actually had the rich man's version of Paul George, which was KD. and so that doesn't make sense. And Steph was hurt that series too, so I don't see it there. So it's LeBron. I mean, at the end of the day, you can mishmash as many guys as you want together, but it's not that LeBron's unbeatable, but he's someone that if you screw around and you get a suspension and you get an injury and you make it a best out of three or you make it a best out of one, you could lose that. I don't care who you have. You could lose that if it's a best out of that. I think that at a certain point, LeBron's going to start downgrading and he's going to get worse, but, he's still got that top level, man. That finals where he was top level, when he actually had time to play and wasn't tired, he was the best player on the floor. And I'm the biggest Steph guy. So yeah. It's still Cleveland, and it's not close to me to who can beat Golden State.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting thing that I don't know really how to figure it out, is how the Cavs keep LeBron fresh for that specific purpose. Because if Isaiah isn't good to go into the All-Star break, it's sort of, you can't lean on him. And I think it'd be a crazy, crazy decision to lean on Derrick Rose, right? It would be just bonkers to do it. And if Lou does that, I'm going to have some questions. But the only other way you can really lean on somebody else is to, A, just give guys minutes. Just give Jay Crowder more minutes. Give Chetty minutes. Give Jeff Green minutes. And just let LeBron play 30-something a night and just, just get the 3 seed. It's fine to get the 3 seed. I would venture to go. They didn't care last year, and the East might even be worse this year, and it's just they're gonna have a lot of easy in division games against maybe Detroit, definitely Indiana. they're just bad. The Bulls, I mean, they have two of the worst, like, four teams in the NBA in their division, and that's only going to help them. Like, that's only going to help them in terms of seeding, because they're going to play those teams a lot. It only becomes like Kevin Love has to be the way you rejig your offense. Lou said at the intro presser for Crowder, Zizic, and Thomas that the offense isn't going to adjust, because Isaiah's very good. He's not Kyrie. That was sort of the subtext there. It's hard to redo all of that. And then just, you know, the question becomes, like, if you give Kevin Love more to do, which I think would make a lot of sense, does that actually help you against Golden State if Draymond Green's hounding him with the elbow? You know, like, does that actually help you in the long term, or is it still something of some version of what they've done with LeBron-centric, slowing it down, grinding it? Like, is there a workable solution there, I think, is a very interesting question. And, like, can you do that enough to give LeBron enough rest where he's not, like, the elongated schedule will help for sure in some way. But, like, is he playing 38 minutes again just to keep them from cratering? Like, that's just a very important subtext, because I think we won't know. I mean, he looked tired last year, and I don't think that's all, like, that he played in the regular season. But I don't think there's getting around that he was a little worn in a way Golden State just wasn't, based on just the sheer talent they have at the top of that team.
Yeah, I think they should just try just going in as the 8th seed. Who cares?
I would be like really ready for the basketball Twitter just freak out of that, and I would enjoy it. It'd be incredible. It would just be incredible to watch, because that would be such a troll job.
Who, and for selfishly as a Warriors fan, as a person that's been watching the Western Conference for the last, you know, my entire life, like, this maybe would cause them to realize that, hey, like, conferences are dumb, and it's stupid, and the excuses that they've made that they haven't done it are all BS. Like, we know that it's an ownership thing, and ownership is not going to, you're not going to get the Eastern Conference to want to change to make it more balanced, because it just doesn't make sense from their perspective, right? But why not just be the 8th seed? Just turn it all the way down, win 38 games, be the 8th seed, then go ahead and beat the crap out of Boston in 5 as the 1 seed, right? Or Toronto, like you always do. And then get ahead and just sweep through the Eastern Conference as an 8 seed, and then play the finals. Like, I think that would be a hilarious and honestly very logical storyline, because you don't have Isaiah. You're bringing new guys in. Let's say you rest LeBron and you play him 32 minutes a game, right? Let's see what happens. And now, maybe we see Minnesota Kevin Love. We see someone that's back to the basket, you know, dropping 30, 20 games. like, that would be so fascinating to see the Cavs just that's like the Spurs saying in FU, benching their players on national TV that one season, a couple of seasons ago. The Cavs would be doing that for an entire season. They would essentially be saying FU to Adam Silver and the NBA and the conferences, but just saying, look, we don't care. We're going to be the AC, and we're still going to beat the crap out of the Eastern Conference because we're just that much better. And I think that Cavs would be, you know, screwed in the Western Conference in the regular season format just because they had to play them. But at the same time, in the Western Conference, if they were just talking about just one series against any Western Conference team, yes, they'd win. But if they were in the Western Conference where they had to play them throughout the season and you had to win, you know, 42 games and plus to be an 8 seed, I think they'd be a little screwed. You'd have to try a lot harder. So,
yeah,
you know, that'd be fun. Yeah. That'd be the most fun part, 8 seed task.
Yeah,
give it to me. I'm ready.
LeBron just coasting, you know, just into that. I mean, you're right about the West, because, like, just the degree of difficulty of surviving that in the West would be a lot harder, because you just have most of the league's really best players are on the West, especially with George and Butler both switching conferences. You know, but Hayward goes one way, but you have two guys that arguably would better go the other way, and then you have teams like the Nuggets, you have teams like the Wolves, you have teams like the Blazers are still, like, have really good talent, and then you have three, like, at least two really good teams and one uber team, and all these, like, the Spurs are going to win 50 games until the world ends, and, like, that's just hard. It'd be so much harder to do in the East, but it's, in the East, you have, again, you have the Nets, the Pacers, and the Bulls all in one conference, two of the teams in your division. You have the Hawks, like, you have just bad basketball teams in your conference. You could with it. Andy, last thing, and we'll let you get out of here. What is your just general, like, if you're looking at this Warriors team, what is just one thing about this team that you just don't know the answer to right now that you're kind of looking forward to this year? Or is there anything for you in year four of this, year two of the KD era? Is there anything that you're just sort of really looking forward to seeing aside from them just wrecking people on a night-to-night basis?
Yeah, I say this jokingly, but not really. I'm looking forward to see how Steph handles this. I'm looking forward to see Steph as someone that has taken a huge backseat and I think has really taken a lot less credit than he should have in the past year. It's interesting to see how long he can do that. Now, a lot of people are comparing him to Tim Duncan and say, hey, he's not going to talk much. He's going to, you know, take as much credit as he needs. He doesn't care. And he's going to go on from there, right? He's going to sacrifice what he needs to. But at the same time, he's a human being, and he's seen what's going on around him, and he does have an ego, right? You don't become this good without having an ego. And I think for him, at a certain point here, he does, and now that might be behind closed doors of how the other guys are treating him, and behind closed doors is different, I'm saying, but he has been disrespected by his own organization, I think, at some point. I think Kerr has gone on podcasts.
The Low Post podcast, like that specific one. The whole takeaway of that hour conversation was that what he said about what he did and did not say about Steph Curry.
And in the victory parade, Kerr went out of his way and congratulated everybody on the team but Steph. And now, and then it shows on the court when Kerr is the guy that, hey, doesn't want to put the ball in Steph's hands, right? And, you know, I've written pieces ad nauseum about it. But at the same time, it's, hey, you can say these are mistakes, but these were done for a reason. And maybe it's not conscious, but subconsciously there's a reason why Kerr said that. And there's a reason why KD feels that it's okay to kind of slander his own teammates' shoe brand just out in the public like that, on the Bill Simmons pod. So those are fine. Like, Steph's going to treat it as an adult. He understands that, hey, these guys, as long as what he says is fine, it's okay. Like, if he's not going to get mad about it, if he's not going to treat it as a big deal, nobody else is going to treat it as a big deal. I find him to be one of the most mature people that we have in the league. But how long does that patience last? Because Steph does see everything and he does read everything. And the reason why he did go on that spree to where he was completely out of control in 2016 and was the MVP back-to-back was because he does see everything and he reads all criticism. That's where he's been, right? He feels like he's somewhat of an underdog. So at a certain point there, his own organization is treating him this way, and he's going to say, hey, you know, where's my dude? And I don't know if that's going to come this year. I don't know if it's going to come next year. I don't know if it's ever going to come because he just signed a five-year contract with no opt-out. So he's going to be here for 5 years unless they trade him. So I'm going to be interested to see that because that would make a great storyline for the Warriors. And really, Chris, we haven't had a real great storyline here for the Warriors in terms of drama for a year or so now. So if Steph is going to go rogue, I'm here for it.
Yeah, the closest you would have had would have been the KD injury scare, which ended up being nothing really. It was a blip. Klay saying that he wasn't going to give up shit, and Kerr's back, and like that's really about it, right? Like it's those three things, and that's. The Kerr thing was very serious, but you know, I mean, they kind of had. You would know better than me, but
They would have won with Mike Brown. They would have won with Mike Brown, God, really. And honestly, they might have even swept with Mike Brown. So.
Yeah,
I'm kidding, but look,
I know you haven't. I'm very proud of you that it's been. We've talked for over 40 minutes here, and there has been no Kerr is awful. There's not been the Kerr is obsessed with bad players thing. Because I mean, his boy is a Sixer now, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yeah.
Because I can't even. That's interesting. But I think that would be if Steph just decides to like go nuclear. That would be fascinating.
And for me that's I mean I haven't even dropped any Steph betters, but that's obviously all I ever talk about, and somehow I've revolved a podcast around the Warriors. It's just mainly about Steph, and really you know that's my main point nowadays. It's just he doesn't get enough credit for what he sacrificed, and really that's maybe a first world problem sort of thing. But if I were Steph Curry, And I think a lot of people would be like this. Hey, if I were Steph Curry, I certainly wouldn't be as nice as he has with the things that some people have said, right? But that comes with the territory. Kobe has gone slander. LeBron has gone slander down the line, right? So, and Steph might never get on the LeBron level, maybe never on the Kobe level, but he's gotten some type of slander as well. And if I were him, I wouldn't be taking it. But hey, he's a better man than me.
Yeah, I mean, just think about Kyrie. Like, if Kyrie was in Steph's situation, how would he handle it? And we have a glimpse of that and kind of him saying,
yeah,
I want to be treated like LeBron, even if it's like in this
point.
Even in this weird way. Because the, I don't know if you saw this, but he had this whole thing where he wanted to be asked about politics and race these things like LeBron is. And like LeBron, I think the reason LeBron gets asked about it is because he was very vocal about it just on his own and wore the I Can't Breathe shirts and has just talked about it in ways that weren't platitudes. And I wonder if Kyrie just wants the opportunity to say platitudes, you know? And I don't know how fair of a statement that really is, but I wonder if Kyrie's in the situation where he could go to say, yeah, I have a better selling shoe than KD. I'm more popular with this demographic. Like, I want to be the guy. I don't want to placate to this guy. Steph did that. And, like, because it's KD and it set up them to be dominant for the short period. Steph's handled it in a really interesting way and just has to handle it. But you're right. Like, is there a breaking point with him? And that's just something. I mean, if you're in your mind, would that be what would be the most likely thing if Steph wanting to kind of reassert himself? Would that be the thing that most likely breaks up this era, this KD era?
I don't think there's ever going to be a point he does that. I think, though, it's going to be like a bunch of different things together. I think that will be one of them. I think maybe KD, who's a rather sensitive person, like maybe he... sensing that other guys are getting credit, things like that. I don't know. Like maybe Draymond, who wants a max extension, even though he's kind of like not the same player as he was before, which could certainly happen. Like he's like, hey, give me the max extension, despite the fact that, you know, 3 years from now, he might not be the same player at all, right, the way he plays. So Klay Thompson, like not wanting a pay cut, wanting to be a top level, like those type of things. Like, them, you know, Warriors organization. Now, I'm blaming on the players, but let's start with the organization. Them not wanting to pay the luxury repeater tax, maybe. Maybe them trading Andre Iguodala next year to save room to sign the call. Things like that, right? And then KD's like, wait, hey, I took 9-0. Like, what are you guys doing trading Andre Iguodala? Like, what are we talking about here? So things like that, like a whole myriad of things that add together, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what? Now it makes sense why the Warriors are not, you're not going to make it past, you know, two seasons from now. I think they will. I think they'll get two more seasons, and I think they'll win two more titles. But if we're talking about, like, a greatest NBA team of all time, then we want, you know, we're talking about 6-7 titles. We're right now talking about two and maybe one or two more. So that might be something that stops them from becoming, like, the Chicago Bulls,
yeah,
right? Maybe we're just in the L.A. Lakers territory or something, yeah, like that. So, but again, that's who really wants to care about that unless you're a Warriors fan. So, yeah. no Cavs fan wants to hear that.
I think it's one of the most interesting questions, you know, especially with, like, LeBron's a free agent next year. Would he go to L.A. and try to win there if the Warriors are still loaded, right? Like, that's just – there's all these factors in this that I think end up mattering everywhere because I think because it's – I think you have seen teams pick two paths, and it's either they're going to try to just throw everything in the basket and try to beat Golden State like Minnesota's doing, or they're saying we're going to wait and try to weather this winter and get through this into when Golden State's inevitably has a dip, and then we can reasonably compete because they just don't see a way to beat them otherwise. And I think that's kind of what teams are picking, but that's, we'll see it in a year from now. Teams will have to pick that again. We'll see what happens there. But Andy, just real quick, hey, thanks for coming on. Took away too much of your time, but just give everyone a reminder where they can find you on Twitter, where they can find the Light Years podcast, and you're writing at Warriors World.
Yeah, absolutely. So Twitter at Andy KHLIU, for those who, you know, want to follow me and unfollow me after a couple of weeks. And then I also write on warriorsworld.net. So, hey, Chris, I appreciate you having me on, man. Always love the conversation.
Yeah, please go give Andy a follow. He will troll you. You'll see a lot of lame-o Steph betters, especially when Matt Moore says something. But if you want a Warriors feed, I'd recommend Andy's. And if you want more on Curry, Go check out Marcus Thompson's book, Golden, actually. Read Andy's Twitter, but then that book, I was, as you're talking about this, I'm literally looking at that book on my bookshelf because I read it over the summer. It's an interesting guy, and it just made me want to, like, really read parts of it. But go give Andy a follow. Check out yesterday's pod with Trevor on the Chetty Osman and Eurobasket. But this has been Locked On Cavs, and we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow.